Good afternoon. It is a Thursday, December 27th, 2018, 17 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program. Scott Spears with you for the ride over the next 2 hours. And this is one of those days, one of those great days where we have two great guests where whatever listening device you're using, as I always say, if you're listening on an old-fashioned radio, tear off the knob. If you've got a button in your car, push the button away. If you're on a listening device, find out how to stop that listening device from turning the dial over the next 2 hours, because we have got a jam-packed two-hour program that will lead you into the new year that you will not want to miss. Before I tell you who's on today, I do want to do a little bit of housekeeping, because as we send out the year 2018, there's two things we have to do tomorrow, and we do every year. Starting at 5:10 tomorrow, Friday, December the 28th, we will have our Best of 2018 special, and boy, did we have a lot of great things that went on in 2018. Our trip to Pittsburgh for the unveiling of the Mr. Rogers stamp, and a whole lot of great guests that were on this program. That show will be hosted and produced by Adam Lepp. You will not want to miss that. Then coming up at 6:10 tomorrow, we have a program where we remember the people we lost in 2018. Among the people we lost who were great friends of this program, legendary actress Rose Marie, legendary actress Charlotte Ray, and you know him best as host of the hit TV series Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, Robin Leach. Just a sampling of the people we lost in 2018 who were good friends of this show, who we will remember tomorrow at 6:10. That program also hosted and produced by Adam Lepp. But we will have clips from the interviews and remember them and the fun times we had. So don't miss that. Now, coming up next hour, what is the best way to ring in the new year? Well, you want to go in happy and with a laugh, and a gentleman who is always good for a laugh, always good for a great interview, and I don't know where it'll ever go. We just turn on the microphones and off we're running for 40 minutes. Legendary comedian Shecky Green next hour. Always a lot to talk about with Shecky. But this hour, we're joined by a good friend of this program. It has been far too long since his last visit. He is a best-selling author. You probably remember him best for his long stint as the doctor on the Today Show. Also other morning programs as well. In the history of broadcast television, as we get ready for the new year, a lot of changes, a lot of resolutions will be made to try to change people's health, get a little healthier, get a little more active. And it's always a pleasure to welcome to these microphones Dr. Art Uihlein. Dr. Uihlein, how are you?
I am well, Scott. Thank you for asking, and thank you for inviting me.
It's always a pleasure to have you on. How were the holidays?
I always laugh when someone asks you, how's everything going? How's your day? How are the holidays? At my age, I'm 82, every holiday is a great one. Every day is a good one.
I can imagine. At what point in your life did you start to take things, I don't want to say seriously, but really start to appreciate things?
Well, that's an interesting question, because it's really just during the last year. I've lived a life on high speed. I lived much of life like there was no tomorrow. Because there is no guarantee on tomorrow. But one of the things I discovered during this past year is that I was not paying enough attention to today. And I have really transformed my behavior, my goals, my appreciation of life dramatically in the last year. And one of the things that caused that to happen was my stumbling across a single line by the Chinese artist Ai Weiwei. brilliant, brilliant creative artist, does spectacular work. He's also a political activist. He was imprisoned in China. He can't live there anymore. And I came across something he said that has really transformed my life. He said, a small act is worth a million thoughts. And the first time I read that, I thought, hey, that's pretty clever. And then I spent a little time really thinking about it. A small act is worth a million thoughts. And I realized how much time I spent thinking things to death that really weren't worth the time spent, that could have been solved with a simple small act. So I have transformed my life, and it's happening. My life is not totally different, but I have tried to change my behavior now. So instead of grandiose schemes and huge plans, and I live each day trying to fill it with small acts, simple acts. Sometimes as simple as handing a dollar to someone because it makes them feel good, it makes me feel good. Sometimes going out to the garage and throwing something out. Sometimes it's walking into the kitchen looking for something sweet and saying, you know, I could do that, but I'm going to try one small act and see if I can't find something better. And it has really, really put me on a new path. Not that big ideas and grand hopes and dreams aren't important, but that you can think them to death, and a small act actually gets you on the path.
You know, Dr. Uhlein, this brings us kind of to today's subject, which is New Year's resolutions, because I think one of the things that we take for granted is stress in our lives. Yes, people make the weight loss resolution, and yes, people make the exercise resolution, but stress is a major factor in how we feel, and I think a large part of stress is overthinking things. So how do we change that going into the new year?
Well, it brings me right back to this. These are words I live by now. I mean, I literally live by these words. I have them posted on my wall on both sides of my desk, so I see them. I have them on my phone. A small act is worth a million thoughts. So if you got something that's on your mind, do something about it. Do anything about it. It doesn't have to, you don't have to solve the whole problem now, but make some small act that gets you on the way. By the way, sometimes a small act is just to plan what your first step will be. Because if you don't know what your next step is, you may take the wrong one. So your invitation to be on today and talk about resolutions came minutes after I read something on the internet, came to me through WebMD, and it talked about New Year's resolution, and it said, start each day with an affirmation. I'm reading it now. A short, inspiring sentence you'll use to build yourself up and remind yourself that you're worthwhile, smart, and strong. No! Do something worthwhile. Do something smart. Do something strong. And you will feel that way. This nonsense about, you know, keep telling yourself you're a good person and you'll become good, it's nonsense. Act like a good person. And this doesn't mean you have to save the world, but do something that makes your life better or someone else's life better. Something simple.
You know, it's interesting, that point, because one thing I do think that has increased, and I don't think has been blown up to a certain degree, is projection. I think that people project their own deficiencies on other people, kind of like what you just said. I don't have to tell myself I'm a good person. If I'm doing good things and I feel good about them, then why do I have to tell myself that? I think that works the other way. If somebody says I'm a bad person, well, why do I care? If they projected that on me, I didn't project that on myself.
I agree completely. You know, the standard approach toward behavior change, and that's what New Year's resolutions are all about, right? Oh, next year I will lose weight, I will exercise more, I will be kinder to people. So typically what they do is they give you information. And the information, you know, eating less sugar is going to reduce your risk of diabetes. Well, if that approach worked, we'd be the thinnest people in the world. What I like to do is say, just make the act, because the action itself produces a transformation in you that becomes self-affirming, that becomes self-sustaining, that continues and reinforces the behavior. So, and by the way, I am not suggesting that we stop thinking about things. I take 10 to 20 minutes every day where I sit myself down somewhere. To the dismay of my dermatologist, it's usually in the sunshine in my backyard. But I sit quietly in a chair, free of interruptions, and I think about how lucky I am. I try to be present for a few minutes and listen for the sounds in my neighborhood and actually hear them. I feel so grateful. And these taking time to appreciate what you have, to be grateful for what you have, makes it so much easier than to change things because you don't feel like you're giving up so much.
You know, it's interesting. Every year, and I don't know how long it's been going on, but for many years, the number one New Year's resolution will be to lose weight. Books have been written. You wrote a book on this at one point, and we still fail at it every year. Why is that?
Well, there are a number of reasons why resolutions fail. Perhaps the biggest one is that it's once one has truly ingrained habits, it's hard to change. We're on autopilot with so much that the behavior just sort of happens before you know what you're doing. Another reason is that we try to do too many things at one time. When people tell me, oh, I've just made a list of New Year's resolutions, my advice is read that list, put something at the top, prioritize those resolutions, and then only work on that one, because the more resolutions you work on, the more things you try to do at one time, the less likelihood you have of success with any one of them. Don't look at resolutions as taking away things. You know, when you think about losing weight, it's, oh my gosh, I can't eat sugar, I can't eat desserts, I can't eat steak. Actually, I look at it in a very positive light. Eat better. Nourish yourself. Choose wisely. Last night I went into the kitchen, as I am prone to do at 8, 9 o'clock, and there were some really sweet things on the counter. We had some company, and of course they brought candies and cookies and toffee and stuff. And before I took that, I asked myself, what could I do that is better than this? And in fact, I went to my absolute favorite, my backup. I keep good frozen, good bread, sliced, pre-sliced, frozen in the refrigerator. I drowned it in really fine olive oil. I toasted the bread first. And I had a nutritious, maybe high-calorie snack. But it was good for me. I didn't have to regret it afterward. The olive oil is good for me. The whole grain bread is good for me. And I was able to nourish myself instead of walking out of the kitchen afterwards saying, what did I just do?
You know, that's interesting because at the holiday time, a lot of these things, sweets, desserts, do get baked, cooked more often, and also given to people more often. But in general, when I think about myself, I am not a sweets person in general. That is not where I go in the store. But at the holiday time, not only because I get them, but because I serve them to other people at holiday party, they are around the house. And in my mind, I think, well, I need to eat those. Are they going to spoil, and why did I even buy them?
Well, it's a question of letting it go to your waist, W-A-I-S-T, instead of to waste, W-A-S-T-E. And I would submit that for, as far as your health is concerned, you would be better off letting them go to the latter. One of the things your little comment illustrates is how profoundly influenced we are by the environment without being aware of it. It's we're literally on autopilot. So one of the things I tell people around this time of year to get themselves through the holidays and for New Year's resolution, not no S there, resolution, you can make one if you want, is make a plan. Don't make a promise. Make a plan. All right, it's holiday time. There's going to be lots of liquor around. Am I going to drink it or not? You know, I think I'll put some Pellegrino in the refrigerator. So when everybody else has their booze, I'm going to have Pellegrino. Okay, what am I going to do with the dessert? Well, am I going to deny myself? Maybe. That's okay. But what am I going to have instead? Because I know I'm not going to get through it if I'm sitting there watching everyone else eat. Another technique that helps me tremendously, Scott, is what I call give it five. It's a pause. I can have anything I want if I still want it in 5 minutes. So I'll walk back out of the kitchen. I'll say, if I still want that in 5 minutes, I can have it. Now that I can have it, I don't need it. And I rarely go back in again. So I urge people, plan ahead of time. If you're going to make a resolution, think about what triggers you to do the behavior you don't want to do. Plan for something you're going to substitute that's more productive, that's healthier. Use your past experience. Think about it. Give it a little thought. What worked in the past? And fall back on your strength instead of letting your life be led by your weaknesses.
You know, interestingly enough, I come to this realization every Christmas time. Because 11 months out of the year, I do not buy anything with flour, and I do not buy anything with sugar at home. I just don't eat those things. If I'm out, sometimes I will eat them, but I don't eat them at home. But at holiday time, I buy these things, as I say, for holiday guests or parties or whatever. And the sweet stuff, the stuff that is bad for you, is a whole heck of a lot cheaper.
Interesting, yes. Yeah, the economics of eating are fascinating. It's cheaper to buy crap in the grocery store than to buy high quality food. But in fact, in the long run, it is cheaper. In the long run, it's a much better investment and probably much less costly, to give some thought to what you're putting inside, to come up with good alternatives. My wife, I know that if I go in the kitchen right now and open that refrigerator in the vegetable door, there will be at least one giant red pepper and one orange pepper. For me, that works as a substitute for cookies or the sugary stuff. It just works. I put spices on it. I savor it. Most of the eating we do is literally semi-conscious. Before you realize that you've gone through six of those sweets, right? Sit down if you're going to eat something and savor it. If you're going to eat a sugary dessert, enjoy every granule of sugar and do it slowly. You'll walk away having eaten much less. It's all about being present. As I said at the beginning, I was living my life in the future. I was not present. I had an experience a few months ago. I don't know if I ever shared this with you. I was sitting in my backyard, kind of looking up in the air, gazing at clouds, and I saw a palm tree, 120 feet tall, in a neighbor's backyard that had just grown there overnight. 120 feet it grew overnight. And that's when I realized I had been sitting in that yard for 14 years, never really paying attention to the view. We hear this word presence, be present. It is so much more powerful and magical than it sounds. And I urge people, take time. If you were going to make one New Year's resolution, one resolution for the new year, I would urge you to make it that you would set aside 5 minutes each day to be present in your life, to ask yourself, how is my life going? How was yesterday? How's today? Is there something I could be doing that would be more satisfying, more fulfilling, more joyous? Take 5 minutes a day. I want to ask you a question, Scott.
Yes.
What's your list of New Year's resolutions?
You know, this year, I've been thinking about it, and the last few New Year's resolutions I have been able to pull off. 2 years ago, or 3 years ago now, I said I was going to walk a mile every day, no matter what the weather, and sometimes in the Midwest, we can get some nasty weather, and I have done that. I still do that to this day, so I succeeded with that one. And years ago, it was the no sugar, no flour at home, which I have succeeded with. This year I've been thinking about it, and I think it is to be... It's kind of the be more present thing, because something I have realized is I'm starting to forget things I do easily. Somebody will say, what did that person talk about, or who was on the show today, or what did you do? And I, for some reason, there are certain parts that are blacked out, and I think I must not have been paying close attention when they were going on.
Well, I think that is fascinating. I suspect you operate, as we all do, part of the day on autopilot. You've done it so many times. It's just, you do it so well, Scott. It's easy to slip into autopilot mode, that's when it's time to wake up. One of the things I really like about those two resolutions you talked about, walk a mile and no sugar at home, is that they are modest. They are realistic. Those are doable. Walking a mile takes 20 minutes, right? Maybe even less if you're walking at a brisk pace, it takes 15 minutes. It is doable. it can be a pleasure. It's not a punishment. Some people think of exercise as a punishment. Yet I'll bet you enjoy those walks now, right?
I do. It's that moment for me when I do have a clear mind. Because there's nothing going on around me at that point. There are no people around me. I don't have to have a conversation. I don't have to be on the ball. Those are the moments I can look at the neighborhood as I'm walking through. I smell things. Oh, what is that? I wonder what that smell is. Depending on the season, it's something different. You know, I can. My mind is clear on that walk.
You described that so beautifully. That's what walking does for me. Your resolution about no sugar at home. I love that. Because you can have sugar when you're out, when you're at a party, when you're with friends, right?
Well, I'll give you an example because I really don't keep sugar at home. But this past Saturday, before Christmas, there is a very famous restaurant in Lima, Ohio, called Cupie's. And I didn't even know I was going to be eating there that day, but some family went there, and they invited me, and I went, and they're known for their chocolate malts. Now, that's something I never would have at home, but I had it there.
The beautiful part about your resolution is you can have a chocolate malt anytime you want. You just got to get in your car and go out and find it. It's not there in the kitchen waiting for you. That's a brilliant resolution. I got to tell you about one I stumbled into that's kind of like that. I was in the supermarket about 6 months ago, and my list always, always contained pick up 2 cases of Diet Coke because I was drinking 5 to 6 cans of Diet Coke a day. That means I've had somewhere around 30 to 50,000 cans of Diet Coke in the last 20 years. 50,000 cans. So I got there to the section, and the price on the cases was raised 50 cents. 50 cents per case. That's 4 cents a can. And I looked at them, and I said, oh, no, that's it. That is the last time I will ever buy a Diet Coke for home. And I stopped drinking Diet Coke at home 6 months ago. That's 180 days times 5 cans. That's almost 1,000 cans I've given up. But I allow myself, if I want, a Diet Coke when I'm out at a restaurant. So I've had about 8 to 10 Diet Cokes in the last 6 months.
You know, that's so ironic, because this is kind of, I think, maybe why I don't have a good New Year's resolution this year. I always like the soda as well. It could be Diet Pepsi, it could be Diet Coke, it could be anything. But it was never something sugary, because years ago I got rid of the sugar. Well, this past summer, I was buying 2 liters, and they always seem cheaper, I guess, and I'm a frugal person. And I got tired of carrying those around. So I bought sugarless, because this went back on another resolution I didn't want to break. I went to sugarless lemonade, sugarless fruit punch, and sugarless iced tea. But that's hard to make at the office, and that's hard to make in a restaurant, because it's not always on the menu.
Right.
So, I still do drink soda at the office, and I still do drink soda if I'm at a restaurant, but not at home. And I'm probably drink more at home than anywhere else.
So there, by choosing a realistic goal, by knowing your limits, by setting up reasonable expectations. It's not reasonable to say I'm going to give up all sugar forever in my life. That's just unreasonable. It's unachievable. But by making your goals realistic, you made them doable. I've been reading a little bit about New Year's resolutions, and apparently by February 1, 92% of people have broken all their resolutions. And the primary reason is probably because they make unrealistic. They set unrealistic goals.
Well, and I think the number one, the dieting one, is very complicated for a myriad of reasons. Number one, the flashy diet plans, whether it's counting points or counting carbohydrates or counting who knows what, that's very complicated for a lot of people because people do eat out and people do get things that are already made, and sometimes you don't know what's in that stuff, and you try to order it a special way, and you know, after about a month of that, after about 31 days in January, you're tired of doing that.
Right. Well, I think some of that it gets down to how you frame things. Probably the single most important thing a person can do is spend a little time working on the frame for his or her life. The frame for my life now is a small act is worth a million thoughts. All right? And that sort of frames my thinking and my behavior. So if you frame the problem, the issue of losing weight, as sacrificing things, giving up things, if you define it by what you cannot eat, instead of framing it as an opportunity to explore new foods, to enjoy new tastes, to experiment with different menus, it becomes a different process. It's a positive process. I think that's a very important point of succeeding with resolutions.
Well, I think another point is a lot of people live with other people, and not everybody in the same household makes the same resolutions. So if somebody is at home cooking dinner, and they probably are not adhering to your diet because they're not on it, that becomes complicated.
Well, it's interesting because the power of social influences is extraordinarily strong in our life. We tend to ignore that. And so it can have both positive and negative influences. When people say, what is the single thing I could do to increase the likelihood that I'll succeed with my resolution, whether it's losing weight, exercising more, reading more, doing good things, I tell them the single most important thing you could do is recruit a friend or family member to do it with you, to share that goal, to share that activity, because your friend can help guide you, can give you positive social support. Your friend gives you objective feedback, far more objective than you give yourself. And we don't want to disappoint other people when we're doing something together. On the other hand, if you are not conscious and not aware, not present, then your life can be shaped by your friend's behavior. Research shows this very quickly, very clearly. Your likelihood of being obese is dramatically increased if you have obese friends instead of thin friends. Dramatically.
That's interesting.
We are all connected.
Well, you know what I have stopped doing? Because the tendency is, when somebody loses weight, is to compliment them. But I have a new theory on this, because I think that's bad. Because if they start to get... I think they're losing weight for the wrong reason then. Because they are wanting your approval. They're wanting the compliments. Maybe they're trying to get a date with somebody. Maybe they're trying to... I don't think they're doing it for health. And I think health, somewhere, it doesn't have to be the main, but I think it's got to be in the driver somewhere of losing weight. If it's not, then I think ultimately there's going to be a problem.
Well, I think if you want to keep the weight off, you're absolutely wrong. You know, people can do crazy things and lose lots of weight for the wrong reason, but those are the people who typically gain the weight back. What's interesting, if you think a little bit about this, we've all lost weight deliberately at various times, and typically a person gets on the scale and says, they see they've lost a pound and it's, oh, that's good, you did it, you lost a pound. That's not what you should be congratulating yourself about. You should be actually thinking about what it was you did, which were acts of self-control, acts of self-management, and applaud yourself not for the weight loss, but for being able to perform the healthy behaviors. That, what that leads you to do is to do more healthy behaviors, which, by the way, if you need to lose weight, will get you there.
You know, this realization came upon me in the YMCA parking lot because I saw people coming out who I would consider thin, who I would consider in good shape physically, and obviously they were doing something physical, I think, in there. But they'll come out to the car, and maybe they will start smoking.
Wow.
And then I think, now, wait a second. I might compliment you for going to the Y. I might compliment you for being thinner than you were, but I don't know that you're healthier than you were.
Right. Yeah, I'm always amused when I go to the gym and see people fighting and jockeying for the parking space closest to the building. They go to the gym to work out, and then they'll wait 5 minutes to get a close parking space. I always pick the farthest space on the lot and walk to the gym.
Well, that, you know, that's a good resolution I think a lot of people should adhere to. Any department store you go to, any grocery store you go to, there's going to be traffic. And if you park way out where nobody parks, you're gonna park easier. You're going to be less stressed in those moments when you're looking for a parking space, and you're going to get a little more exercise.
That's what I call a very productive small act, and it's worth a million thoughts.
And I think that's where we need to be. If you are going to diet, in your opinion, what is the best way to do it?
Well, I am opposed to diets. I have written books about weight loss, but I do not believe in dieting because, by definition, anyone who goes on a diet to lose weight must at some point come off. So I would prefer that people simply look carefully, thoughtfully, be present each time they put some food in their mouth. Each time they make a choice about food. Is this the best thing I could eat at this moment? And so there are times when I will walk into our dining room where we have a huge bowl full of toffee lollipops, and I will say, yes, at this particular moment, when I want to sit down quietly and just relax and enjoy some sensory experience, I want a lollipop. But most of the time now, when I ask that question, I walk past the lollipops and I go into the vegetable drawer to see if there's a red pepper waiting for me. God bless my wife, there usually is.
Is there a good way to lose weight? I mean, what is typical with weight loss? How many pounds a month is a normal goal?
Well, there really is physics to this and chemistry. And no matter what you hear or read, 3,600 calories equals a pound. So you can walk 36 miles and burn off a pound. You could cut out 3,600 calories somewhere along the way, and you will lose a pound if it's less than what you ate before. I think the best approach to this is to do things very gradually. The slower the weight comes off, The more slowly it comes off, the less likely it is to return. So I tell people, make very small changes at first. Experiment. Find some substitute foods that are really nutritious, really tasty, really low in calories. I can, for the amount of peanuts in one hand, I can have 10 red peppers. 10 giant red. Now, you can't eat 10 peppers. That's the good news. You'd get too full. So each of us has to find our own way. I tell people, experiment. And by the way, if you screw up, it's not a failure. It's a learning experience. But it's only a learning experience if you are aware of what's happening. If you file that fact away and say, that didn't work, I won't try that again. Or, wow, this really worked. It satisfied my hunger. It kept me from getting hungry again for 3 hours, as protein will do, or as complex whole grains will do. So I think I'll eat that next time instead of a candy.
You know, a question that always comes up with me, I always hear people say I overate, or I'm stuffed, or I'm still hungry. And I always wonder, the human stomach, what is the right amount of food for the human stomach?
Well, the answer depends on how fast or how slow you eat. Because if you're in a hot dog eating contest, you can probably fill the human stomach with dozens of hot dogs. You'll get sick afterward, but you can do it. It takes 20 minutes after you have had enough food to physiologically satisfy your hunger. It takes 20 minutes for the brain to recognize that. And that's because the gastrointestinal tract, the stomach, puts out hormone signals to your brain that says, enough. Hey, your nutritional needs are satisfied. So one of the most important things people could do would be to slow down their pace of eating. You've heard that old advice, put your fork down between each bite. It's hard to do. We gobble our food today. So slow down. Give your brain a chance to catch up with your stomach.
You know where I see this most often is if I go out, because this is one of the things I do not have at home, but if I'm out with people and they're eating pizza, I notice that when the pizza comes, in the course of 20 minutes, if I think about 20 minutes as being the time it takes for my stomach to register in my brain, yeah. People can eat a lot of pizza very quickly. But how much?
Unbelievable.
Oh, but how much pizza, if you were to start eating and you were going to wait 20 minutes, how much pizza, a slice, two slices, would that do the job? Would you feel hungry or full then in 20 minutes?
That's the astonishing thing. One good-sized piece of pizza, and if you gave it 20 minutes, relaxed, just slowed the whole process down, you would be satisfied with one piece. And I've done that, by the way. I have experimented with that. If I don't slow down, I can eat 3 or 4 pieces before I feel so full I have to stop.
What is the best tip, no matter what the resolution is? Because I know a lot of people, even physically, are talking now about getting away from their iPhones or cell phones, talking to people more often, losing weight is still up there, exercise is always up there. If you want to succeed, if you don't want to be making the same resolution at this time next year, what is the main factor in success in the human being, in the human mind?
If I had to pick, if you allowed me to pick only one thing, it would be to make a plan ahead of time. So, for example, my plan with the phone, if I don't want to be distracted by a phone, my plan is to leave my phone at home. It's impossible to be distracted by your phone if it's at home.
it's a good plan.
It is a good plan. If I'm going to a restaurant, I will look online and read the menu ahead of time and decide before I leave my house what I'm going to order there.
Is meat always a good option if you don't put any sugary, like ketchup or buns or anything on it? Is meat usually a safe option?
I love meat. I mean, I really, really love red meat. And I eat it once a week. And I don't feel guilty about it. And I eat it with a salad, so I've had a healthy meal. I eat a wide variety of food. We eat fish at least twice a week. We eat whole grains. We eat massive amounts of salad. I would never exclude any single food from my diet. Never, unless you have a sensitivity or an allergy to a particular food. The people who are experts in weight loss say you should use meat as a condiment, not as a meal. Personally, that doesn't do it for me. I can use fish as a condiment. We shred salmon into a salad. But when I eat meat, I want a piece of real meat. I want to feel it. I want to taste it. I want to savor it. And I eat it much more slowly than I used to now, so I can get by with half as much meat. It's kind of like a pizza. Eat it slowly, you can get by with half as much.
I have a quick question because I think it's interesting and it's coming up. A guest on this show, who I've always loved, Betty White, is about to turn 97, I believe, in January. And I was recently reading an article about Betty, and she said that because she was never a cook. The article was about her home and how she never cooked. She was never a cook. And she says throughout her life, her favorite foods have been hot dogs and bologna. And that she has eaten massive amounts of hot dogs and bologna, but she doesn't do, you know, she doesn't put ketchup on them. She doesn't do that. It's just the bologna and the hot dog. Can you live to be 97 eating hot dogs and bologna as long as you watch what you eat with them?
If you pick your parents carefully. The studies of centenarians show that those folks are a little different than you and I. They have something genetic going on that just kind of protects them against everything. I'm jealous of Betty White.
Yeah, I think we all are. Dr. Eulene, it's always a pleasure, and I hope we can talk again soon.
Thank you. I wish you the best year ever in 2019.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Art Eulene, get ready for a laugh. Shecky Green up around the corner.
What are you saying?
If they put somebody like Marilyn Monroe or
go ahead and say it. You don't want Eleanor Roosevelt, $10 bill.
Or, and Rosa Parks.